Welcome, everyone. We're excited to see you here and really looking forward to talking to you about syllabus design in this remote emergency teaching environment that we're heading into again, but really for the summer this time. So this is the first live session of the Georgia Tech Remote Teaching Academy, and that program is a collaboration between us at CETL, Professional Education, OIT, C21U, the library, and the summer office. So we're all here ready to help and make sure that you feel prepared going into the summer sessions. My name is Rebecca Pope-Rewark. I'm the Faculty Teaching and Learning Specialist in the Center for Teaching and Learning. We're also joined by Marley Givens from the library, who will be doing some tech support for us. So if you have a technical question, you can place that in the chat and Marley will check that out for you. And I'm gonna let my two colleagues who are with us today as well introduce themselves. So Carol?
Good morning, everybody. I'm Carol Sabino Sullivan, Assistant Director for Faculty Teaching and Learning Initiatives at the Center for Teaching and Learning. And I'm so delighted to see that so many of you are here. And like Rebecca said, all of us who work together to put this summer remote teaching academy together are standing by to be of assistance however we can. And Evan?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Evan Mallon. I'm a postdoctoral fellow with Center for Teaching and Learning. And today I'm going to be hanging out in the background a little bit, helping out with managing the chat and some of our discussions and some of our breakout rooms.
Very briefly, our goals for today, we have three specific goals that we're going to work through. We're going to start with identifying changes that you might need to make to your course and your syllabus that are appropriate for this remote teaching environment for the summer. We're going to look at characteristics of effective learning objectives to help you revise your existing objectives for this new environment again. And then finally, we're going to use the objectives to help you align some of the decisions that you make about course changes with student learning and those situational factors in mind. So to get us started today, I'm going to just show a very brief video that introduces some of the differences between online learning and remote learning. I'm sure you've noticed and you've heard that we are kind of using that distinction that what we're doing right now is remote teaching as opposed to online teaching. And this little video just shows you a little bit of the differences. So I'm gonna go ahead and play that video for you. It's very short and we'll be back in 4 minutes. In this video, we will explore the differences between emergency remote instruction and pre-planned online instruction. After watching this video and completing the accompanying handout, you will be able to define the differences between the two modes of delivery, understand the situational and contextual factors that are affecting our students in this move to emergency remote instruction, and realign your expectations for a remote emergency teaching environment.
You may be wondering why the Institute and many other institutions are referring to our current situation as a move to remote instruction rather than online instruction. Yes, Georgia Tech offers online courses in some programs, most notably the OMS programs, but the major difference is that online courses are planned to be online from the beginning. This is very different than moving face-to-face courses to remote delivery in response to an unexpected and worldwide health pandemic. The design and expectations for online versus remote courses are very different. Despite the common misconception, good online learning is not of lower quality than face-to-face instruction. It's just different, with its own best practices, research literature, professional organizations, and peer-reviewed publications. A true online course, like courses in the OMS programs, is designed to be delivered online by faculty experienced in online education. Students in these courses knew they would be doing all of their work and course interactions knowledge that they have the technology and internet access required to succeed. Faculty members spend a great deal of time creating learning communities and interactions with students in the online tools available to them in this context. But our move to emergency remote teaching has been improvisational, not planned. Tech's face-to-face courses were not designed with the online best practices in mind. We are instead responding to a crisis, leveraging the resources we have to help our students complete their studies with us this semester and also this summer. And because this has been an unprecedented move, we must consider the situational factors impacting teaching and learning right now. Unlike students who register for online courses, we cannot guarantee that our students have access to a computer or consistent internet access. They may not have a quiet place to work or to attend courses synchronously. Students are spread across different time zones all over the world. Students may be taking on care duties that were not as immediate before, and they may also need accommodations online that they did not need on campus. And many may have lost their support systems or their safety in this crisis. In this crisis, we're not trying to recreate the robust educational experience of well-designed online learning, because we are currently in emergency remote teaching mode. Working to provide students with access to learning and instruction in this reality as best we can as a Georgia Tech community.
In this video, we covered the important distinctions between emergency remote instruction and pre-planned online instruction. Please see the Canvas module for the handout associated with this video and complete the reflection activities. So in our handout packet on the very first page, there's a little prompt about some of those differences that I just talked about for remote teaching versus online teaching. And we just want to take a minute or two and allow you to go ahead and download that handout or kind of make some notes to yourself from where you are and thinking about really reflecting on that difference. What are some of the changes that you may need to consider when you are moving to remote teaching?
Well, people are filling in the chat. I see, is it audio is first, higher level communication on course documents. Do you want to speak a little bit on that?
Yes, so I think because we are not able to clarify things in class on the fly in a face-to-face context, you know, one of the things I would think of doing as the first, you know, changes to be made is really sort of buffing up my syllabus so that the expectations are clear.
Yeah, being clear and transparent about our expectations with students is going to be really, really important.
Mary has a comment here on preparing teaching videos, event of technical difficulty, giving students more flexibility. Mary, would you like to speak on that a little more?
Yeah, my comment has to do with just trying to help students who might be in another time zone or who just need more flexibility to juggle all of their personal responsibilities.
I see what might be a similar one from Brett, rely less on real-time discussions and group work. Brett, how do you plan on handling some of those issues?
Hi, I just think about how we can probably text-based, perhaps email-based, if I'm having them do group work, which is a requirement of GT2000, the class I'll be teaching this summer, and just really focusing on how you can get folks around the world to work on a group project together in a way that works with everyone's new schedules. So just ponder some of that now. I think it'll be less real-time and more overtime.
I see several comments here on using recorded lectures, pre-recorded videos, videos and audio blogs. Would anyone who commented on that like to speak a little more to your plan for doing that?
So what I was planning on doing was some sort of a, I would pre-record roughly 30-minute lectures and give them 48 hours to watch them, in which case the next lecture would come online. And then I'll just going through this exercise, it occurred to me maybe perhaps given that some of them may not have stable internet connection, that we could provide, or I will provide, an audio version of that as well, since it can be less burdensome on internet usage.
Yeah, that's a great idea. You can always strip the audio out of a video and put both of them up so that students who have less stable or less robust internet connections can have access to that material, definitely.
Right.
I'm seeing one comment. We'll just do one more comment before we head into our next section about what assumptions should we make about the technologies and aspects and safe spaces that our students are in. And the commenter says they're not likely to volunteer that. We recommend doing a brief survey at the beginning of your course to find those things out. Where are they? What do they have access to? What are their concerns, so that you have a better sense of that going into the course?
Just adding to that, I would say to think about having asynchronous materials available as a backup for synchronous materials. So if you do have students, for example, who are having unstable internet or just simply really low bandwidth and having difficulty with the synchronous sessions, there's still a backup way in order for them to keep participating. So we're going to come back to those reflections about the differences as you move into remote teaching, the differences between your face-to-face class. When we approach thinking about making any kinds of changes to the design of your course, we like to come back to the fundamental process of course design, where you start with the end in mind. What exactly is it that you want your students to come away from your class with? And then from there, work backwards into the assessments and the activities and all of the supports that surround your course. And, you know, right now we're at a time of thinking about a lot of changes, big changes in, you know, the way that students are engaging, maybe, you know, doing away with group work as it was done before and finding completely different formats. It's even more important to come back to that fundamental ground and check in with your learning objectives, because that's really what's going to help guide any kinds of decisions that you're making as you make the changes. And so we're going to just do a really quick review about what, you know, what we mean when we're saying effective learning objectives that can help provide that kind of guidance as you're making decisions then about assessments and activities. So effective learning objectives are student-centered. In other words, they're really speaking about what the student is going to be accomplishing in the course rather than what the instructor is going to be covering. They're action-oriented, so they will identify the skills that students are going to come away with, you know, how they're going to put the knowledge that they gain into action. They are measurable, so you should be able to look at an objective and think about probably multiple ways that you could assess it, and I think that's a really key feature that's going to help as you think about the changes that need to be made. And there's a precision to them as well in terms of, you know, exactly what and how students are going to be getting out of the class, but with a little bit of caution of not going so far as to actually making an assessment the objective in and of itself. And we'll come back around to that idea in just a moment. So a couple of examples here of what I mean by effective learning objectives: solve problems using matrix techniques and algorithms. The students are solving problems. It's action. You can easily imagine an assessment that might accompany this, right? Maybe they'll do a problem set, so it's measurable and it's precise. You can see exactly what it is that students need to use in order to solve the problems. Locate and evaluate relevant scholarly and popular sources on a research topic using library resources. Again, it is very action-oriented. This is what the students are doing. It's the precise that they're wanting them to learn how to use library resources and not just like open Google on the internet. Analyze how gender, race, ethnicity, socioeconomic class have shaped Americans' lives in specific contexts. Again, here we're seeing action-oriented, specific ways that this course wants students to apply knowledge. And, you know, again, we've got a specific context that it's being applied to. Or finally, solve a significant real-world problem for an industrial sponsor using engineering design. I can imagine this learning objective being used in any number of our senior capstone design courses here at Georgia Tech. On the other hand, examples of learning objectives that need revisions, I took some from, I'm an anthropologist, so I kind of made bad some anthropology, introductory anthropology goals. Learn about the four subfields of anthropology. The problem here is that learn about is not action-oriented or measurable. You know, it's not really clear what kind of assessment or changes to assessments would be appropriate. So here, maybe I might change the verb to describe the scope of, just to clarify what it is that I want students to be able to do with learning about the four subfields of anthropology. Or another one, write a research paper about a topic that you find interesting from a class. This one is really just an assignment. It's not an objective. And if I'm in a situation like this where I would need to change that assessment, I would get no guidance about what sorts of options would actually be appropriate. So I would need to really step back and think about, well, what is it that I want students to learn from writing that paper? And so here's just one suggestion: compare and contrast ethnographic accounts of how different societies promote health and wellness. You know, and then a research paper might be one appropriate assessment for that. But I could also easily, as an instructor, think about alternative assessments if I needed to, for any number of reasons. So we're going to give you the opportunity to workshop your own learning objectives. Page 4 of the workshop handout packet, there's a checklist with these characteristics about effective learning objectives. And what I'd like you to do is just take a moment to take a look at your own syllabus and just review your own learning objectives. See if there are any of those problems that I identified with mine that you might be able to shore up a little bit in order to make them more agile in allowing you to make changes to your course.
We have a question, Carol, that may be useful for everyone to hear. Are learning objectives interchangeable with course outcomes?
Okay, yeah, good question. So when I say learning objectives, I am thinking about those course level outcomes. So those high level objectives or outcomes that you actually list on your syllabus. And I contrast them. The terminology I use is learning goals, which is the things that you would build in day to day in your, you know, weekly sessions or in your asynchronous materials. And everything should be aligned. If I go in the other direction, there might be like programmatic outcomes that your course fits into. So the learning objectives are those course level outcomes that should be aligned up and down. I see a comment from Tim that he's hearing feedback from students that they do prefer the synchronous interaction. Yeah, I mean, I think all of us are missing community, you know, and for a lot of reasons. Some things are just easier to work out synchronously. So I do hear you on the importance of trying to find community, but with all those caveats we said earlier about not wanting to exclude students who, through no fault of their own, just can't.
It also speaks to the need for both synchronous and asynchronous. So, you know, when we say asynchronous, we don't mean entirely. So it's not just lectures that you've recorded yourself and post as videos, but when you do have synchronous sessions, you know, consider the students who can't join you at that moment and record that for them so they can review on their own time. So it is absolutely still important to offer synchronous.
What we'd love to hear, what were some of the insights that came up in your breakout discussion? So if you would go ahead and post some comments in the chat, and Evan will call on different individuals in order to contribute out loud.
I see a comment from Marcus right away that they were really getting into it when we ended. And isn't that always the story with breakout discussions? So Marcus, I'm curious, what was your group getting into?
Okay, I'm Alita Markley. I was in Marcus' room. So we just started to talk about course objectives when the session ended. But we mainly talk about the difference between soup courses and remote taught courses, and how we presented, each of us, what courses are we gonna teach, and what are our questions in regards of how to approach them differently. One of our colleagues in the group actually taught one online soup course and one remote course. So we mainly talked about that.
Great, thanks. Yeah, such a That's what is great about the synchronous sessions is, you know, having the chance to hear from each other's experiences. And you know, just to the comment that it felt like just this discussion's getting started when it was over, something that we've been discovering as we've been doing some more of these webinars on earlier when we were waiting for everybody to come back, somebody was asking about community. And I mean, that's really partially what's going on here, isn't it? You know, we finally get a chance to talk with people and that need to reestablish community, and then we get into it. It just feels like it takes a little longer to get going.
So I see a comment from Robert Bell, how best to manage video inserts, synchronous or asynchronous or interactive asynchronous. I'd like to hear a little bit more about your thoughts on interactive asynchronous.
Well, I think Joyce, who was in our breakout group, could speak to that because it was her suggestion about how to guide a asynchronous viewing so that they're not, you know, just viewing it with their minds turned off, but are actually developing thoughts as they're watching it, even though you're not running the class live while it's taking place. So maybe Joyce wants to come up.
Yeah, we really talked about the challenge of having students watch video, and the fact that so many times when we as participants watch videos, we're thinking, oh, this is a little break, right? And I don't have to necessarily pay a whole lot of attention or shift into higher level thinking. And so we talked about some prompts that we might give to students as they looked at the videos so that they would walk away from watching them prepared to really discuss in a way that would be significant and kind of meet our course objectives.
Hi, Rebecca. This is Daniel Schiff. Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Great. So the breakout rooms feature, you know, worked pretty well, but you mentioned that you're not able to send messages to the group during the breakout rooms. They can't ask questions back, and they don't know when the room is gonna be closed. I'm wondering if either there's sort of a supplementary tool, like having a chat room open on the side, and also wondering the school's policy about using other video platforms. So I've heard that Zoom, for example, does have breakout rooms where you can chat with people. You can pre-assign people to rooms in case you have groups. You don't have to do it all manually. Is using Zoom allowed? Is it recommended?
Not recommended. It's not one of the supported Georgia Tech technologies for this resource. So it would be also be appropriate for that. So Carol, do you know anything more about, or maybe Chelwa, if you're still here, do you have comments about kind of the capacity for breakout rooms in this BlueJeans version and maybe events as well?
I mean, I was going to say, you know, certainly the recommendation is to, as much as possible, stick with Georgia Tech technologies. Not only are those linked through Canvas, but they are the ones that we can provide support for in case there's any trouble. And I'm sure everybody by now has heard about all of the security issues going on with all of the video platforms, really. I think Zoom has gotten a lot of attention for that in particular. So using platforms that can be housed inside of Canvas that are, you know, behind the Georgia Tech protections helps, though nothing is perfect. And yeah, so Piazza is linked within Canvas. That's a discussion board you can absolutely have. There's actually a discussion forum that is native to Canvas. So that is another one that you could have. You know, there's nothing that prevents you from bringing in another tool that you are comfortable with and familiar with. But if it is a free version, then it's something just to pay close attention to limits. Many of the free versions will actually have caps on participation that are, you know, you kind of have to read the fine print to figure out what that is. So yeah, I would just say if you're going to go off grid, so to speak, and use a non-Georgia Tech technology, use a lot of caution.
We've also had a little bit of experience with using OneDrive as sort of a collective whiteboard. So through OneDrive, which is a Georgia Tech supported technology, we have things like the Word Online. You can have sort of a shared doc that you share with your students, and they can write questions into that. Or if you have any kind of, you know, something that you normally would have had students come up to write on the whiteboard sort of activity, that's another way that you can do that.
A question from Michelle about how to do the breakout session. So I'll just say it briefly, but like I said, there's going to be technology focused sessions later on that may actually have the materials related to this, but you have to be the moderator in order to do the breakout sessions. And when you are the moderator, when you go to the apps tab over on, like, if you're in the chat right now, at the top you see that there's people, chat, apps, and settings. So if you select the apps icon, when you are the moderator, one of those apps that shows up is the breakout session. So then you would click start on that, and you have the option of adding rooms and assigning people to breakout sessions. And you can either assign people automatically, or you can manually assign people to a breakout room from there. Unfortunately, a limitation of BlueJeans is that you can't do that in advance. So you actually have to wait until people are in the room, and then you can assign them. So you may have noticed today we have three of us who are facilitating this session. It's very difficult to multitask if you are just a single presenter. So if you do have a TA, that could be a really helpful thing to have your TA help you out with. The other thing to note about breakout rooms is that if you get dropped from a call, when you come back, you're in the main room. So somebody needs to be monitoring the participant list as well to see if anybody has been dropped out of a breakout room and send them back if you need to.
So Christine has a great question about peer instruction guidelines. And those are certainly things that we can pull and share on the CETA website. That's a great question. If anyone have any feedback on that or comments, the question is guidelines on best practices for remote education, thinking about pair sharing or peer instruction.
So I actually attended Eric Mazur, who is the person who kind of developed the peer instruction method. He just did a couple of workshops last week about doing peer instruction remotely. And so it was really great. So he did a demonstration synchronously and had us answer. He used Poll Everywhere and had us answer one of those multiple choice questions. It was conceptual. So we selected our choice and then were sent to a breakout room and asked to discuss with each other what our choice was. And then when we came back to the main session, he then re-polled to see if opinions had changed. So, you know, in the classical peer instruction, what happens when you're just in the same room is that you poll the question and then you break students up into groups. They discuss and then they come back and re-poll. So it was really very similar to the process. We were discussing a topic that didn't really have a right or wrong answer, but if you're doing classical peer instruction with like a more, you know, where there is something that is a little bit more definite, the follow-up to that, depending on how the perspectives of the courses change, is for you to do a little bit reinforcement or perhaps ask further questions if the class isn't quite getting it. For the think, pair, share question, the limitation on the breakout rooms is something to be mindful of. It looks like 20 is the cap for this version of BlueJeans. So if you really are wanting to do just two for a pair share, one idea I have is to use the direct message feature and ask the two students who are paired together to direct message each other. Logistically, I can envision that would require some organization in advance. Maybe the students have assigned discussion pairs so that they know who their pair is, because I think trying to pair people in real time during a synchronous session would just logistically be overwhelming.
And I think too, a lot of the active learning strategies that we would use in our courses can be modified to go into an asynchronous environment, and it just lengthens the time scale. For a think, pair, share, for example, a student might individually write a brief post about a question and then might be paired up with another student in a discussion board or more than one student to have a conversation about that. And then they, as a group, report out in some other forum to the rest of the class or the family or to the class, to the faculty member. So that works very well. In a webinar that we had earlier in March, we talked to folks about their experienced online instructors, and Joel Sokol, for example, kind of talked about how he has students evaluate each other's homework and kind of talk about what they, you know, what they understood, what they didn't understood, help them kind of instruct each other to build that knowledge based on that homework. So that a lot of things that we already do, you can do asynchronously. It just lengthens the time scale.
Yeah, there's a peer review tool in Canvas that I do not see used very often. So I'd encourage you to check it out if you want to have students be able to support each other. Just one round of peer review before they submit for your final grading. So I encourage you to check that out as well.
We do have a question, ways to build communities. Have some quick thoughts about building community that you want to share?
I think one thing, especially if you're doing predominantly asynchronous, is to think about how you might use video, short recorded videos. So can students introduce themselves in 2 minutes and upload that to Canvas? Most of our students are going to have phones, hopefully, so they at least potentially have that version of technology, can take a quick introduction video of themselves and post that, and think about ways that students can use video in different ways to kind of get to know each other a little bit better. You know, discussion posts. In some ways, it's just asking them how they're feeling, how it's going for them, helps to build that community because it opens up that space to be human as well as a learner in the environment. So those are just some quick suggestions off the top of my head. Everyone should have, if you're teaching, everyone should have been added to the Canvas site. So double check your dashboard to see if it's not there. Okay, well, thank you so much, everyone, for coming and participating and joining us in this conversation. Please feel free to reach out to any of us in CETL to talk about any of these issues further. And really, the Canvas website has a ton of wonderful asynchronous resources to help support you in this as well. So please do check that out.